At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Nicholas Aberstadt. Nick Aberstadt is the author of Men Without Work. This is a post-pandemic edition. We'll get there, but we have to work through the mystery of 10 million men without work, not looking for work, and surviving in some fashion in this rich and dynamic culture. Who are they? Nick, this is a mystery that can be solved by categories. I learned from you that a married man with children and foreign born is guaranteed to be at work. Guaranteed. It's automatic. And those categories, if not followed, education, with a high school or better education, guaranteed to be at work. And if those categories are not followed, that's who they are, correct?
The odds are really striking here, aren't they? So if you are a foreign-born guy in the USA, it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is or practically what your educational background is, you're more likely to be in the labor force than your native-born counterpart. And with respect to marriage, it's amazing how much lower the work and labor force participation rates are for guys who've never been married than for guys who are married. By the way, also, John, interesting fact, even for guys who are not married, if they have kids under the same roof, they're way more likely to be looking for a job or working. It's something like the provider impulse, you know?
It is. And we have another term that's obvious now, the NILF, not in the labor force. As of 2015, when Nick had the most recent statistics for his publication, there were 7.2 million men not in the labor force. We've identified a couple of details about marriage. Yes, is important. But the foreign-born thing, let's linger on that one a moment, Nick, because you know immigration is much in the news everywhere. It's in the news in Europe, in the traveling of people from the Sahel or from the Middle East into the European Union. It's certainly here with the border crises. These foreign-born men are much more likely to work, to be breadwinners, and to educate themselves, to go back to school. They're a very desirable demographic.
Well, the situation may be somewhat different in some of the European countries, so I don't want to speak about those. But in the U.S., it is very clear that men who come to the United States are coming to work. They have their work rates and their labor force participation rates are much higher than their native-born counterparts. That does nothing to excuse or defend illegal immigration to the United States. That's a question about American law. I'm just describing what people from abroad do when they come here for work.
Yes, in other words, the template is they come here to loaf. That is the opposite of the statistics that you're presenting. Also, we ask the question in your book, what do they do? They're not working. So they're not working. They're either at home or on the street. Do we have a breakdown of activity?
We have a self-reported breakdown of activity, which is maybe in a sense even more meaningful. It comes from Bureau of Labor Statistics time use surveys that people employed, unemployed, and not working or looking for work have all filled out. Now, we know everybody's a liar with surveys, but still there's some very important and I think rather alarming information that comes from this. According to the NEET guys, the ones who are neither working nor looking for work or training or education, they basically do not do civil society. No, almost no worship, almost no volunteering or charitable activities. They've got a whole lot of time on their hands, but they do remarkably little, they say, help around the home or helping with other people at home. What they say that they do is to watch screens. The surveys don't tell us what they're watching. They don't tell us what kind of screens. But we're talking about something on the order of 2,000 hours a year. Now, for most people, that's like a full-time job. To make this tableau even more dispiriting, John, some other additional time use surveys from the government reported before the pandemic that these men who are neither working nor looking for work, almost half of them report taking pain medication every day. So it's not just playing World of Warcraft, it's playing World of Warcraft stoned.
You do break down not NILF, not in the labor force, versus men who are in the labor force versus men who are unemployed and looking for work. It's stark. The number doesn't matter. What it's referring to doesn't matter so much as the scale. 472 for not in the labor force, 221 for working. This is for socializing, relaxing, or leisure, screen time. So we're looking at more than a full-time job. That's like working a 16-hour day at socializing. So you're in a ghost army. You're regarded as, at least our economy treats you as dispensable. We also condemnatory. I note that all of our culture, as you say, leisure produces culture and culture produces leisure. Our culture condemns or derides or in some fashion chastises people for being idle. And that doesn't change the meaning of being without work, although it must do something to self-esteem, Nick.
It surely does something to self-esteem because we can look at what's going on with the so-called deaths of despair in the United States, the deaths from drug overdoses, from suicide, from cirrhosis. This is Ann Case and Angus Deaton's classification from some years back. I mean, these are looking a little bit too much like Russia for comfort, if you see what I mean. So it's not as if people are dropping out of the workforce and then enhancing themselves through the use of free time or restoring themselves through the use of free time. What's suggested by the mortality numbers is that people are on a track towards misery.
We need to talk about things that are not in this book right now and that Nick's colleagues have contributed. So when we come back, dissent. Nicholas Eberstadt is a political economist at the American Enterprise Institute. He holds the Henry Wendt Chair at the American Enterprise Institute, and he's the author of 20 books and monographs, Men Without Work, Post-Pandemic Edition, the most recent. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.